All right, then the last case on the court Zoom calendar this morning is in the matter of the welfare of the child of BDM and ATCW and AKA ATW, AKA ACW. We are ready for oral arguments. Each side will have 15 minutes for a primary argument. Appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal argument. Each attorney should be sure to introduce his or herself for the record immediately before presenting your argument. We'll now hear from counsel for appellant.
Thank you and good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jim McGeaney. I represent appellant BDM in this appeal of a district court order terminating her parental rights. BDM is the biological parent of the child at issue here. The child's father was deceased. This is a case that was brought to the attention of Child Protective Services after the appellant had parented the child alone for the first 12 years of the child's life. And the Child Protection Services got wind of this case based on some reports about neglect and then did an assessment. They determined that services were needed, and the case eventually was assigned to an ongoing child protection worker who testified at the trial, who's referenced in the briefs as AEW. The court also heard from other witnesses at trial, including the child, the guardian, and a therapist that was working with the child as well. The issues on appeal are whether the district court's findings are clearly erroneous when it determined that the petitioner has proven or had proven by clear and convincing evidence two of the statutory grounds alleged in the petition, and of course, the ultimate finding in a CHIPS or a TPR proceeding about whether termination of appellant's parental rights were in the child's best interests. The issue about credibility of the child's testimony, I'll leave to this court. I appreciate that the district court has given deference to credibility determinations, especially since the district court heard the testimony in person. But the inconsistencies in the child's testimony are pointed out in our brief. I won't take this court's time further, but I urge this court to consider that this is testimony of a 12-year-old child. And as the record reflects, much of the agency's behaviors and decisions that were made in this case throughout the CHIPS proceeding and in the termination proceeding were giving deference to a 12-year-old child's, I guess I'll call preference to live with the family foster provider and not with appellant. The main issue for the agency in the record was their concerns about appellant's mental health. There was a lot of testimony about the concerns of her mental health, including some self-reports of appellant that she was struggling with some auditory hallucinations and some other issues. And then I believe the district court's finding ultimately that it was appellant's failure to address her mental illness that led to the findings for both statutory grounds, the first being that appellant failed to correct the conditions leading to the child's placement, and then, of course, the court's finding that the child was neglected and in foster care. The issue in this case, as we see it, is that the evidence presented was based on hearsay and opinion from a non-mental health practitioner, AW. Well, certainly I concede that AW had a degree in social work, and at one point in her career was a licensed social worker. I believe the record showed that prior to this case, or during this case at some point, AW allowed her social work license to lapse, because it's not required when you work for an agency. But AW had zero experience and zero education in diagnosing and evaluating severe and persistent mental illness. And yet the petitioner relied almost exclusively on the opinions of AW regarding what she believed were appellant's serious mental health issues.
But does it matter in the sense that it's really behavior and conduct that's at issue? I mean, somebody can have a severe mental illness and still be, can parent a child, if, depending on the severity of the symptoms, et cetera. So it's really the behavior, and that's what AW testified about. Or why is that wrong?
Well, I agree with Your Honor that certainly behaviors would be looked at by the fact finder in a case like this. But it appears from the record and the testimony that while the behaviors, some of them may have been concerning, appellant's behaviors alone would not suffice to establish that the statutory grounds had been met. Respondents' issue throughout the case and in the testimony were not, somewhat concerning about the behaviors, but more concerning about their assertions that A, appellant had a serious mental illness, but more importantly, B, that appellant was failing to adequately treat, I guess, and comply with mental health practitioner recommendations and medications. I note that in respondents' brief, they indicate that one of the reasons that they relied on AW alone at trial was for judicial economy. Rather than call the custodian of records and the providers that appellant had seen and signed releases for, instead what they did was they called the social worker, the ongoing case manager, and relied on her testimony for the ultimate conclusion that appellant was not only mentally ill, but had untreated mental illness, and that was the basis for the TPR petition, not necessarily the behaviors alone. And as the court indicates, and it's certainly true that there are many parents who can parent adequately who suffer from severe and persistent mental illness, many likely who are undiagnosed. The difference in this case is that because of the reports, Child Protective Services got involved with the family, and then they with their oversight, they determined that appellant wasn't treating her mental illness appropriately. The issue with that conclusion is that the record fails to reflect that. Without hearing from someone who was qualified to diagnose appellant and offer an opinion about what was appellant's mental health diagnosis or her illness, and what treatment plan would have been appropriate, what appellant was failing to do, and why that was, why that was the issue that is causing the child to be placed out of the home wasn't established in the record. A review of the transcript, even the child's testimony, the parties agree that the case was really driven, the main reason that the child was not living with appellant was because the agency deferred to the child's preference. The child didn't want to go back to her mother. And then the child testified to some extraordinary behaviors that's why we would argue that her testimony was not entirely credible, to, self-serve her request that she wanted to live with the family foster care provider. The AW admitted on the stand she didn't have the education, the experience, or the ability to diagnose any mental illness. And she was basing her opinions about appellant's mental illness on anecdotal experience, which really is insufficient when you're going to, the standard for termination of parental rights, as this court's well aware, is grave and weighty reasons. And the burden of proof is clear and convincing evidence. It's our position that the evidence regarding appellant's A, her mental illness, and B, her failure to adequately address her mental illness were not proven. The evidence is not clear based on AW's anecdotal experiences alone, and it's not convincing without hearing from someone who's qualified to offer those opinions and diagnoses. And that's our argument on both grounds. The, you know, basis for the child, well, it's twofold in the second finding by the court, that the child was neglected and in foster care. I don't think that, you know, we can argue, I'm not going to argue the child wasn't in foster care. She was. But the record reflects that the main reason that the child ended up in foster care in the first place was there was a voluntary placement in the beginning. And then once the child got a taste of not being in appellant's care and having the foster care provider, she didn't want to go back to her mom. She made it clear.
But there was evidence that the child had a diagnosis of PTSD and that she was unkempt kind of in appearance, didn't look people in the eye, you know, that there were issues. I mean, there is that evidence in the record, right?
There is, and I think the record reflects a lot of that trauma was caused by her biological father dying, you know, not expectedly. It was a sudden death, and then there was the move from New Mexico up to Minnesota. But I don't know that the record adequately reflects an inability or taking care of her daughter's mental illness in the short time that they were in Minnesota. And that's not really part of it. Doesn't appear that that's part of the district court's rationale about the child being neglected. The findings that the district court rely on mostly are, again, appellant's described behaviors, and the court, you know, relied quite heavily on the child's self-report, a 12-year-old's report. In addition, the court relied on findings that, based on AW's testimony, that appellant was not following her case plan because she wasn't adequately addressing her underlying alleged mental health or mental illness.
But Mr. McGreeny, wasn't there findings and evidence that she went to multiple mental health treatment providers and stopped going every time they were recommending a more serious level of care, to the point where she saw a psychiatrist at the Mayo Clinic that recommended antipsychotic medication to help her address these matters. And again, she stopped seeing that doctor. So it seems to me that, you know, the requirement in her treatment plan that she seek help for these issues, that the agency was attempting to implement that, but that she was kind of torpedoing it by changing treatment providers to the extent that they had to cancel family reunification meetings because she had terminated her treatment with her counselor just prior to that. So it seems like there's more to it than just anecdotal evidence about her behaviors.
Well, Your Honor, I agree that there was testimony along that line from AW. But again, that's all hearsay and evidence that's not supported by that's testimony that's not supported by any documented evidence, no mental health records, no corroboration from any of the mental health providers. It's merely AW's recantation of what she claims she reviewed in the records without providing the records to the district court. So while there's allegations to that effect, there's not clear and convincing evidence to support those conclusory statements by AW. And that's the issue that we believe is with this case, is that petitioner relies solely on a witness to testify regarding records from New Mexico, records from the Mayo Clinic, records from Nystrom and Associates, records from all these providers, and all these allegations about appellant not following through with her treatment is insufficient. That doesn't carry the day in a grave and weighty proceeding that's so important as a termination of parental rights. that doesn't ensure that the parents' rights are preserved and protected. And it's our opinion and our position that merely calling AW to testify to all this background is insufficient. That's where we believe the case is lacking. And then I know I'm out of time. I'll just touch briefly, but on the best interest standard, again, it's the same argument that because the evidence is insufficient regarding the statutory grounds, considering the lengthy time that AW spent with her biological mother, this is not a case where a newborn is being, you know, or a young child is having their parents' rights terminated. There's a long established relationship, and there's just not enough evidence to show that preserving that relationship was not in the child's best interest. And I'm out of time. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We'll now hear from the state.
Good morning. I may please the court. My name is Deanna Varga. I am an assistant Olmsted County attorney, and I represent the Olmsted County Health, Housing, and Human Services. Your Honor, in this panel, the county would request for this court to affirm the district court's decision. The findings are not clearly erroneous based upon the record because they are sufficient, and there has been no abuse of discretion because statutory basis does exist, and the district court's order outlines the reasons for why those statutory bases exist. The county has met the standard by clear and convincing evidence, and as a result, this court should affirm the district court's decision. In order for there to be a termination of parental rights, there must be at least one statutory ground to exist. So this court,
I'm sorry to interrupt, but the case law is pretty specific that there have to be findings of fact on the best interest factors and on reasonable effort. And so how do we find that in this opinion? That's my question.
Certainly.
I don't see them.
And Your Honor, there is a case that states even if the factors are not explicitly in existence in a specific order, this court can undertake examination of the entire record to determine if a decision is justified. And that case is In re Tangi, 672 Northwest 2nd, 623, Minnesota Court of Appeals case from 2003. Your Honor, I believe that out of the three best interest factors, the court did analyze two. With respect to best interests, let's see here, the second factor would be with respect to parental interest in preserving the relationship. Your Honor, even though it's not explicitly written out by the district court in its opinion, I think the court really did consider whether it would be...
How do we know that? And where is that in this opinion? I mean, the case law is pretty unequivocal.
Well, Your Honor, with respect to the... So if my interpretation is correct with respect to the case in Retangi, the court can look at the entire record. With respect to the court's direct examination of the witnesses, outlines the questions that the court asked. And I think those can be utilized by this court to determine whether the court has considered a parent's interest in preserving the relationship. For example, the court did examine the reasonable efforts made to preserve that relationship between a parent and the child. The court also heard testimony with respect to how much the parent loves her child and what are some of the things that a parent has with respect to strengths in parenting the child. I think the court really did consider the parents' interest based upon hearing that testimony, as well as some of the questions that the court asked of the witnesses directly. So with respect to the statutory basis, it is the county's position that there is sufficient evidence that exists to find actually all three of the statutory bases. Once again, this court does not have to find all three. Only one must exist in order for there to be a termination of parental rights. With respect to the subdivision 1B2, parent-child relationship and providing basic necessities under that relationship. The failure to comply with a case plan in itself is evidence of a parent's failure to comply with duties under that relationship. There has been some discussion already with respect to mothers' attendance at mental health treatment providers and whether she has truly addressed the underlying issue, which is my parents' mental health impacting the child and those mental health triggers and how they basically impact parenting of said child. The case plan specifically outlines that, number one, the parent must demonstrate that she can follow through with mental health services long term. So there are people monitoring parents' mood, functioning, and identifying red flags. So the case plan specifically was designed not to just for the parent to attend a mental health provider, but that parent follow through long term and really establish that service and frankly stabilize mental health symptoms in order to start addressing the underlying issues of how to basically mend that relationship between parent and child. The parent has not done so. The parent did start attending some DBT services where the provider indicated to AW, the ongoing social work in this matter, that definitely there needs to be additional service. The parent then started mental health services at Zambra Valley Health Center, and the diagnosis there was issued with respect to the mother as PTSD. However, that diagnosis was based on self-reporting by the mother and that there were no other collaterals consulted when the mental health provider made that assessment. After speaking with AW, and that therapist was actually invited to many case planning conferences where that therapist was an advocate for the mother, the therapist determined that perhaps maybe there needs to be additional review of that diagnosis and review of records, prior mental health records of the parent, in order to confirm the accuracy of diagnosis. This did not happen because the parent then terminated services with Zambra Valley Health, and then that spiraled into additional factors that have preventive reunification. For example, the family therapy that was designed to include both the child's therapist and the parent's therapist, so all four of them would come together and start working on the on repairing that relationship. The parent did start with Nystrom services. However, the parent refused to sign a release of information. And it appears from the record that those appointments at Nystrom were sporadic, and the court did find so as well. Therefore, looking at all of these services, can we really say that mental health was not only stabilized, but also the underlying symptoms were treated? And the answer is no, because the mother did not follow through long-term with those services. And should there have been records that indicated otherwise, the mother was in position to provide those records at the trial to correct any of the information that the county did not get right. The parent did not do so in this case. I should note that Mayo Psychiatry also provided a service to the parent, and the psychiatrist there recommended medication as well as a deeper assessment, the mother, which did not comply with to the county's best knowledge. So with respect to that piece in itself, which is frankly the meat and potatoes of the case plan and what needed to be addressed, the mother did not comply substantively with that case plan. As a result of the parent not being able to stabilize mental health symptoms, it's the other topics, the other tests in the case plan have also not been addressed. The district court found that the parent is unable to recognize the impact on the child, in that appellant's mental health has. And there has been various testimony from not only the ongoing social worker, but also the child's therapist directly about how the child has been impacted. The child herself indicated that she does not feel safe. She could potentially have a relationship in the future with her parent if she were to get that additional help. But at this point in time, or at least at the termination of parental rights stage, the child did not feel comfortable residing with the parent. With respect to failure to correct conditions out of the home, which is 260C.301 subdivision 1B5, once again, it does not appear from the record in the testimony that the mother complied with the case plan and therefore did not resolve the conditions leading out of the home. To address some of the concerns from the appellant, from their argument, there's been some concerns about AW's expertise or experience in order to be able to call out those mental health symptoms. There is a case, and I unfortunately found it very recently, so therefore it is not in my brief, and it is an unpublished case. But should the court choose to consider it, there is a case. It is In Re Welfare of NUM. It is a 216 Westlaw 4497594 case from the Minnesota Court of Appeals, dated August 29, 2016. In that case, the issues were a bit different. They were examining whether a social worker is an expert versus a lay witness, because the social worker in that case provided testimony with respect to mental health symptoms. And in that case, the court, the county did not call any mental health experts. And the court found that that testimony is of a lay witness and it should come in because it is rationally based upon their own perceptions and helpful to the determination of a fact and issue. The court also found that even though the parent in that case did some things on the case plan, frankly, that parent failed to make meaningful or significant progress. And as a result, the Court of Appeals affirmed that case. So the issues were a bit different, but to the underlying question of whether a social worker can discuss some of the personal observations of what she has seen about appellant, and the record is full of various concerning factors that the social worker testified about, as well as the assessment worker, where to whom the parent actually confirmed many of these concerns, such as having hallucinations. And she quoted, the parent quoted to the assessment worker that it felt like a TV was going on in her head 24/7. All of this combined, as well as the child's credible testimony that the district court found it is to be credible, and combined with the social workers, AW's experience being in adult mental health services for 15 years, as well as child protection services, I think she said 8 or 9 years.
That, so can I interrupt you for a minute? So in Ray Tangi, what page number, where are you looking to say that the district court doesn't have to make findings, and that we can comb through the record as an appellate court and say, heck, there's enough evidence here, we're going to affirm? Because I re-looked at my copy of the case and I don't see that. I see the opposite.
Your Honor, if I could just confirm with my brief here.
Sure.
Page 625. Oh, I apologize.
Yeah, what I read is it's generally not susceptible to an appellate court's global review of a record. So I just don't see it. If you have another case that you're looking at, let me know.
I think I do. I have page 635, citing State versus Schoen. In re Tangi.
Page 635 of the opinion. Okay, all right.
So to go back to my, to conclude my argument with respect to the social worker's experience, even though the social worker did indicate she does not have the ability to diagnose people, the social worker can observe cues as well as their clients and assess them whether they are able to parent their child appropriately based upon the some of the concerning factors that they are observing and seeing directly as a layperson. And that is one of the reasons why the social worker asked for the parent to undergo through a psychological assessment so we could confirm what level of care is needed. Unfortunately, the mother never really followed through with respect to finalizing that diagnosis and subsequently figuring out a level of care.
Counsel, your time has expired. Are there any other questions? All right, then. Thank you for your argument. Rebuttal argument, please.
Thank you. I'll be brief. I agree with the court that the district court's conclusory finding about the best interests in this case without any analysis or without addressing any of the balancing tests is insufficient, and it and this court shouldn't re-examine the record and make findings that were the privy of the district court judge, and that alone is grounds for reversal of this case.
So if we were to agree with you with regard to inadequate findings, why can't we go ahead and say, well, at least this basis, there's enough in the record contingent on whatever findings the district court might make, obviously, on best interest?
Well, for one reason, Your Honor, it's because the findings aren't there. In the order on appeal, the court doesn't make any findings regarding best interest other than a conclusory statement that it's in the child's best interest. So there's no factual findings, at least by the district court, referencing anything in the record to support.
Right, but if we were to agree with you on that point, should we just remand? I mean, could we affirm in part and remand?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
I think the case law is clear that despite a district court finding that there's clear and convincing evidence to prove one of the statutory grounds, and I agree with counsel that it just needs to be one of the three, even if it were all three of the three, the ultimate issue is best interests. And so there's numerous opinions from this court and the Supreme Court that even though there may be statutory grounds proved in a TPR or a CHIPS case for that matter, well, in the TPR, we'll stick to TPR, that without a finding that it's in the child's best interest, then it's reversed back to the district court, because even if there's statutory grounds, there needs to be a finding that it's in the child's best interest. Not
but counsel, I agree with you. They're two separate issues, whether or not the record shows clear and convincing evidence to support a statutory ground for termination, and whether or not the district court adequately analyzed best interest. I think what my colleague is trying to ask is, why can't we assess whether or not the record provides clear and convincing support for a factual basis for termination under the statute and simply remand the issue of the best interest for more adequate findings?
I don't know that you can't, but it would seem that that would be having this court reevaluate credibility issues on testimony and reexamining a record that this court didn't witness in person. So what would prevent this court from reexamining, you know, whether AW's testimony is sufficient for that matter on the statutory grounds that she testified to, or the child's testimony regarding behaviors alleged by appellant? I mean, the whole record then should be subject for re-review rather than just have this court review the record and make its, I guess, independent determination about whether there's facts in the records to support the best interest analysis. And it's really, it's not just the finding that it's in the child's best interest, but how those findings comport with the requirements that they, that the district court go through that five-part analysis. You know, HGB is the one case, I think that's the first case that I find that talks about whether, even if there's a finding that the statutory ground's been proven, there's the test, the balancing test. And I don't know that it's appropriate for an appellate court to re-review a district court's record and make independent findings that the district court failed to make. So it'd be our request to reverse the district court based on not only that the fact that there's no analysis about best interest, but in addition, that the statutory grounds were based on insufficient evidence, I guess that's not the right term, that the factual findings by the district court regarding the statutory basis are not supported by clear and convincing evidence either. And so this court shouldn't go back and re-review the record and make independent findings. This court should reverse the district court's order because it's insufficient. And I see I'm out of time. Thank you.
Well, thank you, both of you, for your arguments and briefing. The matter is submitted, and you will have our decision within the expedited time frame required for decisions of this type. That concludes the court's Zoom calendar this morning.
Thank you.
Have a good day, everybody.